It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I want to welcome everybody to this very special edition of the show. Today is show one of year eight of the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Unbelievable.
And we have a special guest with us today who looks a lot like his father and is busy reading some things with earplugs in, so he doesn't know any better. But I remember 8 years ago today, he was considerably smaller.
That is true. Yeah.
Now, he's the reason, one of the two reasons why the soccer dad is dressed to go to a game right after the show.
Yeah, yeah. Both have games today. We had to divide and conquer.
Yeah, good. Well, it being that show again, I have an annual story that I like to run down with people. Some of you will remember it, some of you won't. But 8 years ago, this particular Saturday, we had set up the new company, and we had negotiated with the radio station to start our own show. And it was, other than the one thing I'm about to bring up, just a pretty normal day. I'm driving down Butler, get a text from my son, and called him back on the hands-free. And he said, Dad, you're not going to believe this. Okay, what? He said, there's no power in the building. And, oh, what happened there? And apparently there was some major area-wide power outing. And we checked in with the electric company, and they announced to us that they expected it to be on at 11:30. Well, as you know, the show runs from 10 to 11. So we're sitting around talking. We got to meet Angela and Howard that day, and we just chit-chatted for a while. Nothing better to do, right? So all of a sudden, about 10 minutes to 11, power starts coming on. You see the lights coming on, the computer starting to kick up. And we hadn't even gone so far as to plug in our headphones yet, much less organize our thoughts for what was going to wind up being a 4 or 5, 6 minute segment on the show. So it happened, and we got it out there. But that was a what you might call a rocky start to what has since then become a pretty normal event on Saturdays.
Yeah, it was not the best start, but everything kind of picked up. It set the bar low for doing a better next episode,
which was good. When you look back, you know, I'd been doing radio for a long time, but never in the pilot's seat, and Adam had not been doing radio for his life. So we were both a little nervous. I think that's all long gone away, because we know who you are out there, and we know how much fun it is to talk to you. And one more little tidbit I thought of this morning about this topic, then we'll move on. I have a friend, I'll call him Bob, mostly because that's his name, and he knew we were going to start the show that day, and he said, well, can I be the first caller? I said, sure, call us as soon as we go on. Be happy to have you. So got home after the show, and I got an email from him, and he said, I tried, but there's nothing there. So I had to relate the whole story to him. So I said, try next week if you want to. So we logged on to the show the next week, and he called in, and he carries to this day the title of first ever caller.
And always will.
Yep. Yeah, that part's absolutely true. Anyway, it is the beginning of year eight. I don't know where it goes, but we plan to be here every Saturday, as always, unless we're kicked out of town or there's a major holiday. But we will be here, and hopefully for several years to come. Keep trying to catch up to the real estate people. Just not running fast enough, I guess. All right, this week, I would rather, you know, I tried to come up with a word. I couldn't sum this up in a word. But I did figure out my thoughts about the market this week. It is better to have one horrible day in a great week than it is to have one great day in a horrible week. That was last week.
Yeah, or if you want a title for the week, it's the Facebook flop.
Yes, it was. That sound you heard was Zuckerberg's wallet falling on the floor and shattering.
Yeah.
Couldn't happen to a better guy, in my opinion.
I actually had to do a double take this morning when I saw how good the numbers were, because I Thursday was so bad.
It was.
That it felt like it wasn't going to be a great week, but it turned out to be a pretty darn good week anyway.
Yeah, but we were probably looking at that at about the same time and having the exact same reaction because it just didn't feel that good after Thursday.
No, it didn't. And Friday was okay. It was a good day on the NASDAQ, but the Dow was down slightly.
Yeah,
but
at the end. Yeah. It had another sell-off, Friday afternoon sell-off. But so NASDAQ, who's been struggling so much,
had
a good day.
Pleasantly surprised at the numbers, and I'll get to that in a second. I want to talk a little bit about Facebook because they really ruined what could have been a great bounce back week.
Oh, it would have been spectacular.
They had the biggest one-day dollar decline in market cap in the history of any stock. So
that's going somewhere. Think of things like WorldCom back in the old days.
Bad.
Enron.
Those were slow, steady declines. This was a one-day they just got whacked, and it was all in pre-market. There was nothing. If you own the stock, there was nothing
too
bad about it. Yep. We do not own it, but we own it via several different ETFs, and the Facebook contagion spread throughout the whole market on Thursday, which I'll get to more on that in a minute. I think that's a little overblown. But they, for the first time in history, they lost users. They saw a slowing advertising spend from their consumer or from their advertisers, and they saw huge spending plans as they shift to the metaverse, whatever the heck that is. And
he made it up.
Well, it sounds like some movies I've seen, and they're trying to make this a reality. I am quite skeptical. I would not touch Facebook at all right now. But the massive miss by them brought down the whole market. And it was ugly. I mean, the NASDAQ and the Dow were off 500 points. The Dow, that's not as big of a deal. On the NASDAQ, that's a pretty big deal. But still managed to, the NASDAQ turned out a 2.4% uphill move during the week. So despite that big miss on Thursday, that's a nice week. The S&P was up 1.5% and the Dow was up 1%. So moving on to other things, this is pretty interesting but useless data, and it's brought to you by Bespoke Research. It has to do with the Olympics. During the Winter Olympics since 1972, the average gain in the U.S. market is 1%. Not bad. However, in the host country, the average gain has been 1.3%, so a little bit better than the U.S. market. So my question is, will China get a bump? Because typically you get a lot of positive press around the Olympics. China has not been getting a lot of positive press around the Olympics.
And they've earned every bit of it.
Exactly. So I'm wondering if they are going to buck that trend and actually continue their downward trend that they've been on during the Olympics. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I'm not putting any money on it either way.
No, I wouldn't either. Earnings season is well underway. More than 500 companies have now reported in the current quarter. The numbers are consistent with what we were seeing early in the quarter, which is a really good quarter, but not quite as good as the last few, which had been sort of artificially bumped up by the COVID reopening trade. The numbers still look very good. Earnings rate is at 75% and the revenue beat rate at 74% compared to long-term averages of 68% and 59%. So really strong season so far.
Yeah, they're down to really high.
Yeah.
From what they were, really, which was unbelievable.
That, in a normal year, that would be an excellent season.
That's exactly right. And there's no reason that it's going to change remarkably. We're just basically getting over the COVID economy, so we're getting closer back to normal. We've got a lot more economic stuff to talk about after the break, and we will have a trivia question. Trivia this week is about stock splits, and I'm sure you can figure out why.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Banwe Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banwe Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banwe.
And I'm out of there. Sorry. I was looking. It looks like we're getting a second call, but the phone's not ringing for some reason.
Drifting off toward the control booth.
Yeah.
And we have a couple callers. One of them, I'll get right to you both, but one of them is a little bit different than our normal caller. But anyway, I wanted to give out the trivia question before we put Mitch on because I want him to have a chance of winning.
Go for it.
All right. This is a big week for stock splits in that Google announced their split, which happens Tuesday night after the close of the market, 20-1. So if you own one share of Google at $3,000, you're going to own 20 at $150. It makes absolutely no difference as far as being a monetary transaction, but it can make a lot of difference in what happens, and we will talk about that once the callers are done. Good morning, Mitch.
Hey, Mitch.
You might mean Nick.
Nick.
Oh, Mitch. Oh. I'm sorry.
Got they written the name up there wrong. Nope. Oh, I know who this is. Hey, Nick.
it's funny. I get Mitch all the time, believe it or not. I don't know why
that's
that is.
Funny.
Oh, well, it's because of your deep, unabiding love for Mitch McConnell, I'm sure.
That's right.
So for those of you that don't know, this is actually Nick Howland calling, and Nick is actually running for a Duval County, what is it called, Nick? It's escaping me right now. City Council.
It's City Council at large. Group 3. So, there's 19 city council seats. 14 are specific districts within the county. 5 are at large, meaning they are technically responsible for or cover the entire county. That's one of the seats I'm running for.
And this is, you have a special election coming up, if I'm not mistaken.
We do. This seat was vacated by the late Tommy Hazuri, who, as you guys know, served our city for over 30 years, a great servant leader for Jacksonville. My politics are not the same as his, but I certainly respect him and many of the things he accomplished in his 30 years of service. So, he passed away, unfortunately, in the middle of September.
Okay.
And the city's charter says you got to fill that seat within 6 months. So it will be final election will be February 22nd, and whoever wins, hopefully me, will be sworn in probably within a week or two. So we will have just gotten it in within 6 months.
Okay, great. So you said February 22nd. Does early voting open soon then?
It does. In fact, if you have registered for an absentee ballot, you probably already have it. And those can be submitted all the way up to a couple days before the election, which is, again, February 22nd. And you also have the option to vote early, which starts on February 12th. And there are about 15 precincts. You know, I live over in the Intercoastal West area near Beach and Hodges, and the precinct for early voting for me is over in Pablo Creek Library off Beach. But your usual suspects, if you voted early before, are generally all open.
Yeah, I live in Jacks Beach, and I know the Neptune Beach Library is our site, and it will be open as well. So everyone needs to get out and vote in this election. It's very important. If we have learned nothing over the last couple of years, it's just how important local elections can be. And people often overlook that, and especially when there's no one else on the ballot, they just don't get out and vote. I really hope we can buck that trend and get Nick a ton of votes. But that's my opinion. Nick, tell us why we should vote for you.
Well, thank you, Adam. I appreciate that. I am a Navy veteran. I'm a business executive. I'm a husband. I'm a father of two kids, two teenage boys. And my wife and I moved here 15 years ago. We moved here when I was recruited by the manufacturer Armor Holdings the airport, which makes body armor, life jackets, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I've been in that industry since, working for various companies here or working here for various companies overseas or headquartered elsewhere. And during all that time, I've been involved in civic activities, you know, on various city boards, corporate boards. And about a year and a half ago, I stepped aside from my business career, and I helped launch the Firewatch, which is in the kind of Northeast Florida's effort to end veteran suicide, which is something that's so far has been highly successful. The governor has chosen us to launch statewide. And so I've kind of have a lifetime of service. I've always looked at city council. When this opportunity opened up, I jumped on it because I believe that Jacksonville is a bit at a critical juncture. You know, we're at 1 million residents now. Fast forward to the next census in 2030, we'll be at 1.3 million residents. So people are moving here in droves. To me, the most important thing that our city, three most important things our city needs to pay attention to as we navigate that growth are, one, public safety. There's really nothing more important. We've got to support our police, and we've got to put to end that conversation about defunding because that hurts retention, that hurts the profession, and that hurts our public safety. The second thing is jobs. I think the city's done a good job of bringing financial services companies in. You saw Dun & Bradstreet relocate here. Mm-hmm. But I think we need to do a better job of bringing manufacturers, logistics companies, things like that, because as all these families move here, we need to create kind of those middle-class jobs for our city to support the growth. And then lastly, you know, we have amazing things going for us as a city, things that every other city in the country would probably love to have, you know, our low-income tax environment, our great climate, the ocean, the river, the intercoastal, the wetlands, all the space we have. We need to leverage those as we grow over the next 10 years, and in doing so, preserve the great quality of life we have in existing neighborhoods, like yours, Adam, you said Neptune Beach, and ensure we build great quality of life in all the new neighborhoods. It, we're at a critical juncture, and man, we have a great opportunity to really move Jacksonville forward over the next 10 years. That's why I'm running. I want to be part of it.
Well, I mean, that I couldn't have said it any better myself, and those thoughts mirror my own. So I am very, very pleased to put my own plug in for you and say vote for Nick, because it sounds like his vision for Jacksonville is very much aligned with ours. And I'm happy to have you on, and I'm really glad you called.
And I unfortunately am not able to vote for you because I live in St. John's County. So,
but you would if
run for something bigger. Yes, I would if I could. And next time, run for something larger, and you can include us.
Well, thanks, Steve. I appreciate that. And if anyone wants to learn more about my platform, they can visit votehowland.com. That's V-O-T-E, and then my last name, Howland, H-O-W-L-A-N-D.com. And I lay out the platform there, and you can contact me through the website, anything.
Great.
So,
yeah, we appreciate it, and I hope our listeners do too and feel a little more informed on their next local election. So good luck to you, Nick. I hope it goes your way.
Thank you both. I appreciate the time.
All right, our pleasure. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Chuck.
Yes.
Good morning.
Hey, how did you all do this week?
Great.
Yeah, it was a net positive.
Yeah.
So I can't complain. It was choppy, and we kind of warned you about that in early January, but it's definitely stayed that way. How'd
you
do?
A few in a row.
Oh, I had a good week, but let me tell you, I know it says in Proverbs not to gloat when your enemies stumble, but I have to ask you a question. Can you name two people, two high-profile people, one is CEO and one is a media CEO, that their names are almost identical, their last names are almost identical, that had a really, really bad week?
Well, you've got to be talking about the CNN.
Zucker.
Yeah, and Zuckerberg. I feel like this would be one of those answers on Jeopardy. Same last name, Zucker and Zuckerberg.
Yeah, two of the biggest enemies of the United States had a really bad week.
I couldn't agree with you more.
I hope that is people voting with their eyeballs in the case of Zucker, just not watching CNN, and they had to find a reason to get him out. And people voting with their phones and tablets in the case of just staying off of Facebook for being such overbearing, personal information selling, censoring idiots. And to me, it's a huge win for democracy.
Yeah, and I think if anybody, in all fairness to everybody, if anybody wants to know why we feel this way about Zuckerberg, read Molly Hemingway's new book and see what he did with $500 million to influence elections in 2020. And if that isn't enough to curl your toes, I don't know what will be. So look it up. I can't remember. I'd get the name of the book wrong if I shut my mouth off, but I've already read it.
And Chuck, I don't know if you heard me last week, but I gave you props because you called the turnaround based on one of the good reports in the FANG stocks. And that's exactly what happened, I believe, last Friday. And so good call on that one.
Yeah,
he started to turn around.
He was crediting you in the office this week.
I heard it. I heard you say that, Adam. I listened to the show, and it just seemed like the market was so oversold that something had
Agreed.
To give.
Yep.
And what was interesting this week was it was like a yo-yo. Google on Tuesday, great.
Yep.
Facebook, awful.
Faceplant.
Amazon, you know, and so we were being tossed around like a bunch of, I don't know what. I mean, it was just like a roller coaster ride this week.
Yeah, the problem is the reaction on Thursday I thought was irrational. The market sometimes acts rationally, sometimes it doesn't. Facebook has a Facebook problem. Facebook does not represent, right now, the rest of tech. Tech is beating earnings at an 88.3% rate this quarter. And they're raising their guidance 14% more than they're lowering guidance. Now, does that sound like a sector that's in trouble? No.
No.
Now, not at all. Facebook and Netflix both have some issues, but Facebook's issues are uniquely Facebook's.
Okay, music's playing. You want to take a quick shot at the trivia?
What's the trivia?
Oh, I didn't give it out, did I?
Yeah, you'll have to hold over.
Yeah, I'm.
No, that's okay.
Well, call back in if you know, and I'll give it out here in a couple of minutes. But we appreciate your call, and as always, we'll talk to you soon. All right,
thanks,
guys. The trivia question, which I was supposed to do.
I don't think
I'm
going to
give you.
Time.
Yeah, I got 7 seconds. It's just a bit too long. All right, we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And now I actually am going to give you the long-awaited trivia question, which again revolves around the stock split. And it's for a reason. I always try to have a reason for things, as you all know. This week, Google announced a 20-for-1 stock split. Most stock splits are, they'll go 2-for-1. I got one today, I'll have two tomorrow, something like that. 20-to-1 is a really high ratio. And there's some background here that's interesting, I believe. But anyway, here it is. Stock splits, I'm going to make it a little easier because I've delayed so long. Stock splits used to be more popular than they have been lately. In fact, from the year 2001 to 2007, the median number of splits was 35 a year. Since then, that median number of stock splits has gone down to what is the question? It's a whole number, and it's a median. So for those of you who are not terribly mathematical, the median means there were as many years that had less as there were years that had more.
Yep.
It's not an average, it's a median.
And I hope someone calls and answers this, because there's a lot to talk about with this. There's reasons behind that, and so you know it's a whole number below 35, makes it pretty easy. Give us a call.
And one of the concepts that enters into this is the stock index. And there are many, many, many stock indices, as everybody knows, but they are not all the same type of product. And one of them that is probably the best known and the least useful. Is that a good description for the Dow?
That is. It is. It is the best known. It's the one that if you turn on any business channel, it is most likely to be in the lower right-hand corner.
Market went up today, and what that means is the Dow went up today.
That's right.
It means very little else sometimes. But tell the people why this is a real significant thing for that company and for some other things.
For Google.
For the 20-to-1.
Yeah,
split.
Google, it's being widely considered that they are doing this partially to try and get into the Dow as a Dow component. Right. They are not currently in there because their stock price is too high. And I will tell you why that's weird and why that is after this call.
Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Van Wees. Thank you for all the good that you do. And the lady that answered the phone, give her a raise. She's awesome.
I will. I'm going to start paying her double what I pay her right now.
And I'll take it out of one of my trust funds. Not a problem. We'll funnel it to her somehow.
That's a good plan.
I'll just find a different memo reason to put on there or something.
There you go.
I'm gonna guess the trivia question, but before that, your friend Nick, I did my homework, and I think he's going to be all right, but please let him know. If at first you don't succeed, try again, but I think he's going to be all right this year, but we'll see what the voters do.
Well, we hope he wins.
That. Yep, I think so, too. And Nick is a personal friend of the family. He is. Our sons go to school together, and I've known him for quite a while. But that's a good thing, because I can tell you that the Nick that you just heard, that's actually how he feels. That is not Nick the politician. Yeah. That is Nick the person.
That's a good thing.
That's kind of people we needed.
No kidding. Exactly. Exactly.
We'll talk about D.C. On your trivia question, gentlemen.
Yes.
Just before that. Back in the 70s, my dad, my uncle, and I made tons of money on the split. We even were able to purchase a 65-foot motor yacht for cash.
Well, but we're going to talk about that kind of theory, too.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, it started with a not really an in, but individuals like yourself guiding us and say, hey, every week, you know, come up with $100, $1,000, and dump it in. Yeah. It's going to split. Well, we didn't know it was going to split three times, but holy mackerel, Andy, you know? And that's I'm talking back in the early 70s.
Yeah.
Early to 70s. I'm going to say 18 because 35, and I don't Google. I do Google, but I don't Google answers. I'm old school. I'm going to say 18, and I'm probably wrong. Well, if I do ever guess, I want to give my gift to someone else, not for me.
Well, that won't be an issue this week because you're too high. But
oh wow!
Yeah, I know it changed in popularity. That's our point completely. So
you're not going to believe what that stock was. Madison Square Garden Gulf Western.
No kidding.
Oh my! Nobody. Okay, we weren't sure if it was going to. Two gentlemen like yourselves up there in Wall Street. We weren't sure if it was going to when it was going to split once, but then it just kept on splitting. It's like, wow, this is a ton of money.
No kidding.
Yeah, and back then, that's when a dollar was a dollar, not like a dollar.
Yeah, but, exactly.
And my cousin in California is crying, even though he's very comfortable. He's got $4.65 for a regular over there, and he's got a big V8, 43-gallon gas tank. I said, well, you won't be coming back to Florida where you were born and raised for a while, I guess. He says, they keep on going up over there. He may
will
come
be.
Back. But I'm going to let you guys go, and go, Nick, and God bless you all. Thank you for all the good you do.
Thank you. Always fun to hear from you. All right, 18's too high. It was 35 for those years, and now it's less than 18.
Yeah, so
got a little bracket.
We were talking about Google and their 20-for-1 split, and Phil brought up a good point too that I want to address. But first, it is being considered that Google is trying to get into the Dow as a Dow, one of the 30 biggest companies in the U.S. But the problem with the Dow is that it's a price-weighted index. So you can't just add any company, and especially with a high stock price, because it throws off, it skews it too much. Amazon can't
imagine
get into
if
the
they
Dow.
Did the Facebook face plant and had been allowed into the Dow at 3,000, the Dow would have just plummeted.
It would be catastrophic.
Yeah, and it really was just one company's bad news.
So most companies or most indexes these days are cap weighted. So the bigger the size of the company, the bigger their weighting is in the index.
I remember when Apple split, they went 7-to-1 just to get that price way down too.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, the bigger the company, the more impact they have on the index. But in the terms of the Dow, it's just their stock price that matters. So the market cap isn't even taken into account. So that's why I always say the Dow is an outdated, pretty terrible indicator of how the stock market is doing. Much better off looking at the S&P, or really, if you want to be accurate, look at the lesser known ones, like the 5,000, the all stock index. That one I like much better, but the S&P is a fairly good gauge. So
yeah, another aspect of that for the Google company itself, or Alphabet, what they're going to find is that if they're allowed in, or when they're allowed in, and I don't think this is going to surprise anybody that we expect that they'll get in there soon.
I would, yeah.
Dow is constantly changing components, although it doesn't happen frequently. It happens occasionally, and it always will. But what happens there is that all of the tracking indices for the Dow, the diamonds, for instance, DIA, mm-hmm. all the mutual funds that emulate the Dow, all of those are forced to buy on the open market. So they have to sell off whatever they replace, and then they buy Google. Well, that creates a level of demand over and above, and that's ultimately very good for the stock price.
Yeah, historically, when a stock split, it made it more attainable for the average investor. So if you think about a company like Berkshire Hathaway that trades in the $300,000-$400,000, that's not attainable for very many people. But if you split that stock and you bring it way, way down to $10, all of a sudden your average Joe who starts a brokerage account with $100 can afford to buy it. And so the theory is that it makes it more accessible. Now, one of the problems with that today is that you no longer have to own a whole share. You can own a fractional share on many different trading platforms. So that isn't as relevant as it used to be. And the stock split, one of the reasons it's gone down so much is that you just don't need to split it anymore. You don't need to make your stock attainable to the average investor, because the average investor can buy a fraction of a share or buy an ETF that holds the stock, and so it's just not as relevant.
Yeah. The old theory that Phil was alluding to back in the 70s when everybody was getting on board with this stuff, the rumor, which often turned into fact, was that once a stock splits and the price falls in half, the stock immediately starts going back toward its old price. So you make a lot of money. Well, that's not really what happens.
Nope. If you had 20 shares of Google and it was worth, or one share of Google and it was worth $20, after the split, you'll own 20 shares worth $1. So you have the exact same amount of money invested.
And if history is a teacher, and I'm not saying that this is good, bad, or indifferent, you all have to make your own decision on that. What has happened during stock splits recently is that the stock starts down after the split rather than up. That's the bad news. The good news is 3 months later, 6 months later, it's usually up. So if you want to follow and trade on stock splits like that, it's something to think about. All right, lines are open. We'll be back right after the break. One more segment. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I would, again, put out the trivia question, only this time I'll do what I was supposed to do the last time and say, brought to you as usual by Ken Dales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Back in the period 2001 to 2007, the average number of stock splits per year was 35. Since then, they are not as popular. How many is the median number of stock splits per year since then? 18 is too high. All right, back to some market and jobs and things like that. The jobs numbers is interesting a big enough word?
Yeah, it isn't. It was interesting because it's confusing. A lot to unpack. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of conflicting information out there right now. If you turn on the news, it doesn't matter which side of the political news you turn to, you're going to hear that everything is bad. But everything is not bad. Nope. Some stuff is bad. Everything is not bad.
It's a Dickens of a report, isn't it?
It's
the best of times, the worst
exactly.
of times.
So, and the jobs were no exception to that. In fact, they're a really good picture of why you can paint it whichever way you want to. So the ADP report came out on Wednesday, and it was terrible. There's no other way to put it. It was awful. Minus 301,000 jobs created last month versus an expected 180,000 positive. So that's a flop. That's
Oops.
Terrible. Friday, the expectation was that it would come in at plus 125, and we were expecting, kind of cringing, because we were thinking we were going to see another negative report.
Might be 200-300 down.
And no, it beat by a wide margin. It came in plus 467,000. Well, the unemployment rate did tick up to 4%, but that was sort of because the labor force participation rate ticked up to 62.2 as people re-entered the workforce. So that's a good thing. So you can see how, depending on what story you want to make of those numbers, you could paint it either way.
For those of you who are regular listeners, I predicted something of the sort here a month ago. And if you want to know what I meant by that, I said every year the government reports are reset to adjust for population changes and that sort of thing that they accumulate along the way. And that happens for the January report, which mm-hmm. we just received. The BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics, that does this stuff, they have told us in writing that it was a minuscule change. But here are some of the updates. They do them two ways. One of them is based on ethnicities, and one is based on overall population. So the population adjustments of the two, one of them was 973,000 up. The other one was 1,066 up. The size of the labor force for the two, up 1.5 and up 1.4 million people. The number of people employed for the two, 1.47 up. And the other one was 1.199. And that one is I didn't mean 1.4. The employed people are, the establishment survey was 471,000 up, but the household survey was 1.199 million which means they had a really big adjustment in there. Number of unemployed people was first one up 59,000, second one up 194. Now, when you're messing around with all those adjustments, what it does to the bottom line, I cannot tell you, except I have always said that the report you get in early February is unreliable compared to anything that happened in the past. It should be used as a baseline for the reports coming forward. So don't base too much of what you think about the economy on that minus 301 versus the plus 471. I would tend to trust the ADP number a little more because it's strictly a sample of the business they do with employers.
But it tends to be revised a lot,
too. It does tend to be revised a lot. And their methodologies are totally different. So when you're looking at it and thinking, wow, this is really weird, give it one more month to shake out and let's see how closely they're tracking.
And I say this about almost all economic reports. You're looking at, it's like looking at a balance sheet. It's a snapshot of a period of a time.
Right.
And really, it doesn't tell you that much. You need to look at least 3 to 6 months worth of data to find a trend. And that, or an average or a median or however you want to do it, probably a moving average would be the best calculation. Mm-hmm. But picking a snapshot in time and saying this is what the economy is doing, that's wrong. That's, you just can't do that. You can say, well, that was a bad report. Hopefully next month is better, but right. Or vice versa. But it just would not be accurate to do it that way.
Yeah, and meanwhile, all over the world, countries are raising interest rates.
Yes, everywhere.
Several have gone up over 2% in the last couple of years.
A lot of emerging markets.
Yep. Now, we, Adam and I, call us as weird as you want to call us, but we've been calling for this for a long time.
A year now.
A zero interest rate policy not only has its losers, I would say, meaning savers, because you can't make enough money on your money, but it's bad policy as proven by 20 or 30 years of Japan, where they got nothing out of doing it for decades, and it should, at the first possibility, be changed. Well, a couple of reactions to this report. The market and all of the so-called experts were shocked, and I'm going to throw myself in there too, although I doubt perhaps the accuracy of the thing. I was shocked at the big number. So what now does that mean for, let's talk about Build Back Better. Oh, no, we don't have to.
No.
It's gone. It was gone when Manchin said it was gone. Now it's dead and gone.
Well, just because you ask someone for the thousandth time expecting a different answer doesn't mean you're going to get a different answer. It's been dead for probably 5 months, and the media just won't let it go.
But nobody's going to argue successfully anymore that we need it because that we need to get jobs and all that stuff. That's just not going to happen. So that I would call a very positive fallout from this thing. I was not that unhappy. But on the other side of that coin is the Fed. Now, this one, I suppose a little background here, not everybody listens the whole time, but the Fed announced, late last year, I think, that there would be no increases till 2023?
They were saying that pretty consistently up until maybe November-ish.
Mm-hmm. Well, we called them on it because we said, well, there's just no reason. There's no way.
It's
you
unrealistic.
Can't look that far out.
And it's unrealistic.
Yeah. You don't make promises that you can't keep. Right?
You could see that we were talking about the reopening trade probably starting in January of last year. Now, reopening means things are getting back to normal, whether or not there's a virus or not. And so them saying that it was going to take 2 years for all of that to happen, it just didn't make any sense.
Yeah. I think most of the thinking world, which is all that area outside the Beltway, the thinking world now realizes that we're in an endemic situation with the virus, meaning it's around, just like the flu bug's around, everything's around, and that the pandemic is over. Now, that means business as usual, and that means I think it's a good time, really, to start raising interest rates. But the talk has shifted even a little bit in the last 24 hours. Now they're looking at maybe 0.5 instead of 0.25.
I think it's too much of a shock. I don't think they'll do it. I've heard that batted around, but it was just one Fed chair that said that, one of the guys who has a vote. But it would take many more than that to agree with that.
I agree. The Fed has consistently been wrong. The old cartoon. Has the Ben Bernanke ever done anything right? No. Well, it's like that with all of them.
Yeah.
They're either doing too little too late.
Yeah, they're always chasing.
Yep.
Always chasing.
And there's no housing bubble. That year was 2007.
We had a caller, but that is the music, so.
All right, well, we're out of time, frankly. So if there's something, if somebody wants to take a shot at this, email me. No, don't do that, because I'm going to tell you all anyway. It's down to 9 from 35 now, and there's no particular, you can't trade on that or anything like that. It's just interesting that the world changed, and I think a lot of it is because what Adam was talking about. The fractional trading ability now with no overhead on it is just a wonderful thing because it gets people involved in the market that they couldn't otherwise afford to be in, and that is a good thing.
Yep.
All right, show number 2 of year number 8 next week at the same time. Please be here. We'll talk to you all then. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour, signing off.